From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of October, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net, and we'll hear about a program to recycle those grain bags that you're seeing across the Midwest filled with corn this fall. They're usually just one-use bags, and they might need a new home in your trash can as your trash can bag. We'll hear all about that and so much more on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, where today you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference. It's coming up on the 12th day of December. Don't wait. There are a limited number of seats for that conference. Sign up early. Sign up today for Farm Assets in Bloomington on the 12th day of December. That's a Friday.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. I know you're in the combine this afternoon. Still doing corn?
Yep. Yeah, we got done with beans there last week and back into corn. And quite frankly, we don't really have a whole lot left to go. So I'm thinking by the end of the week, we're probably going to be finished.
Oh, wow. Will that be as early as you've ever finished?
You know, I think it's going to be our second earliest finish that I can remember in my career. But by all means, it's not all that common to be done before Columbus Day. So this has been a breakneck speed here over the last couple, 3 weeks.
Did you get a rain earlier in the week that slowed you down, or did that pass you by?
Passed us by. I don't know. I don't know that it can rain in Shelby County anymore. So, it doesn't seem like it wants to. We had a little shower there last week, but yeah, it's dry as a bone.
How's the later season corn compared to the early season corn?
In all honesty, our later season corn is pretty good. I mean, I would say that as long as you've got decent soil types and you sprayed fungicide, you could probably have a pretty decent yield close to a 10-year APH, probably not necessarily like a 5-year APH, but by all means, the corn's been a pleasant surprise for us. I think the mid to late May planted beans were maybe our biggest disappointment, but we kind of knew they were fighting an uphill battle based on the way we finished the year. But yeah, corn's been awfully good, I've got to say.
Tell me about the marketplace as you see it today.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of sold off here later in the day. Nothing too bad, but I mean, there's no doubt you're going to have some hedge pressure. There's a lot of combines rolling throughout the Corn Belt. You know, and of course, there's going to be some stuff that gets sold across the scale. And bottom line is you've got a ton of grain moving at this point in the game. And really, there's not a whole lot on the bullish side of things. I mean, we don't have a USDA report to take a look at. A lot of folks felt like we might scale back the corn yield a little. Beans, I think that the average trade guess was a slight revision lower. But bottom line is, I mean, people know these are still awfully large crops. And then whenever we kind of throw that into the balance sheet, it keeps us with what I would call ample carry out as far as corn's concerned. They're on soybeans, you know, we're snug, but that's still assuming a big export number. So I don't know that anybody's too worried about running out of corn or beans here over the next few months.
Without fundamentals being updated by USDA, the trade usually turns its attention to some of the technicals. Maybe there are some other things, but I know today's trade for December corn bounced up against both the 20 and the 100 day and just couldn't make it through and then fell off later in the day. How do you see that continuing to play out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough time to be able to push up above that level. I mean, I feel like whenever you're looking at corn, you're probably going to be looking like a sideways type trade. I mean, on the bullish side, yeah, maybe the yield comes down somewhat. We know demand's extraordinary. But on the bearish side of things, I mean, I'll tell you what, USDA has probably overstepped their bounds just a little bit on their forecast for demand. So I think you could take some wind out of that sail, and that's probably what would have happened here on this October WASD, especially if they were to drop the yield any. So really, you can talk both sides of this corn market, and I'd say you probably more bearish than bullish. But with that being the case, I look for more of a sideways type tone. And, you know, in all honesty, I think it's pretty tough to expect that this thing's going to break out technically either way.
And on the soybeans?
Yeah, I mean, on soybeans, it's range-bound trade as well. I mean, everyone's kind of waiting around to see if there's going to be some sort of a trade announcement. We've been told we're going to have some sort of an aid package that's going to roll out. And, of course, that won't happen until we get some sort of a resolution as far as the government shutdown being finished. And so bottom line, there's not a whole lot to trade here. I mean, it looks like as far as Brazil's concerned, I mean, they're getting along okay. Planting's going all right. I think they're a little bit dry in some areas, but overall, you've got to expect that you can't get much of a bullish benefactor there from Brazil at this point. There's just really not much down there that's going to get you super excited.
As you close out the harvest season, what will you be paying most attention to going into November and the end of October?
Well, of course, we're very interested towards the end of October on what is this trade deal look like. President Trump and President Xi are supposed to be meeting. They're going to come up with some sort of a plan. I guess it's my personal opinion. We already have a decent idea there. There's no doubt China's wanted to stay away from us. But at the same time, we're also, as the U.S., the world's largest consumer of goods. And so China clearly would like to have something be able to put into place with us. But they've definitely made a point here. And so that's what I'm going to be very interested in. Obviously, we're going to get another WASDE report at some point. I don't know if October is just going to completely be canceled. But if it is, we're going to get one in November, and we'll get a lot of updated information there. So those are things I'm going to be watching very closely.
It'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. The Phase 1 trade deal, there was supposed to be a Phase 2 last time around, never took place. Phase 1 was implemented to the point of about 75% of their purchases for agricultural products. Part of that was the transition to the Biden administration. A lot more time after this one. Do you think the Chinese will actually make a Phase 1 kind of deal with this much time left in the Trump administration?
That's a pretty tough call, but I do think, once again, that they want to have some sort of an agreement in place to where the tariffs aren't as problematic for them as what they have been. There's no doubt that it's affected their economy. I mean, clearly it's affecting us probably as much from the producer standpoint as anyone, but inflation certainly hasn't gone away. And so I've got to think they're going to try to do something to at least appease us to a point that it takes a little bit of that pain away. Whether it's going to be a Phase 1 type trade agreement, I don't know. But if we remember, boy, they bought a ton of corn after that Phase 1 trade agreement, and that certainly impacted our markets and was a big reason why 21 and 22 were such good times for the U.S. growers. So we've got to hope that we get something like that, because right now it's sorely needed.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with AgMarket.net. Matt, thanks for being with us. You can hear him again on our website at willag.org. In today's agricultural news, details are scarce, decisions are not final, and the shutdown is slowing a farm aid package the White House is trying to assemble. The White House was putting together the farm aid package that President Trump said Monday he'd talk about this week. Then the shutdown and furlough of USDA political appointees took the sails out of a Tuesday announcement, leaving the timing uncertain. Here's Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
All we hear is from the administration on $10 to $14 billion, so the final figure hasn't even been agreed upon. And then there's only $4 billion in the CCC.
Same fund that USDA used during President Trump's first term trade war with China. Grassley says he spoke with cabinet officials on how to make up the difference.
And they said there'd have to be two tranches of it, some of it coming from money available right now, and then the fund would have to be supplemented by the Congress of the United States.
Also giving lawmakers a chance to boost farm income with nationwide year-round E15 legislation.
This would generate $25 billion in new economic activity, and roughly $10 billion of that is directly from increased corn demand. Another thing Congress can do is increase transparency in input markets, and my Fertilizer Research Act would help do that.
But Grassley agreed the White House should move faster to stem another farm crisis, that after it announced an emergency move to use tariff revenue to keep the WIC nutrition program alive during the shutdown. Speaking of WIC, or the Women's, Infants, and Children's Food Aid Program, it's no longer in danger of funding loss. Axios reports the White House will transfer funding derived from tariff revenue to keep the program going for the foreseeable future. White House officials, who described the infusion as temporary, also declined to say how much money was being sent. The Office of Management and Budget worked to find a creative solution to preserve WIC, which annually has over 6 million people benefit from the program. And finally today, a bipartisan group of 47 legislators from both chambers of Congress petitioned the EPA to finalize its proposal for the Renewable Fuel Standard Program, which includes measures to discourage the use of imports into the U.S. biofuels market. The group sent a letter to Lee Zeldin, the Environmental Protection Agency administrator, asking him to advocate for the proposal. The legislators say it represents a common-sense approach that puts America's farmers first in line, strengthens U.S. domestic biofuel markets, and delivers tangible economic benefits to rural communities. An EPA proposal announced in June would change the RFS program to increase the Renewable Volume Obligations, or RVO, reduce the value of renewable identification numbers, or RINs, for foreign-produced fuels and biofuel components, and reallocate unmet regulatory cost from exempted small refineries to larger ones. The group argued that the RIN reduction measure would provide essential support for the farm economy. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, this season there may be more grain bags across the Midwest than ever before, and it might be important to recycle them. Generally, these are one-use bags, and so once they're emptied, they need to have a new use, and recycling might very well be worthwhile. I called to talk with Chris DeClerc. He's an irrigation specialist at Delta Plastics. They have a secondary company called the Revolution Company, and they will come anywhere in the Midwest to pick up grain bags as long as they're gathered together. Chris says he's been with Delta Plastics for about 15 years, but recently has been working through the recycling program.
I've been with the company about 15 years, but I'm now also in charge of running a recycling program where we bring in ag plastics, we recycle those plastic ag components, and we make plastic trash bags out of them.
So in particular, we're thinking about the number of grain bags that are being purchased across the Midwest this year to store corn, because it should be such a large crop that farmers are hoping to keep more of it on the farm than in the elevator. They'll need, because I think most of these are one-use bags. Is that generally the case for the grain bags, and they're actually recyclable?
Generally they are. Yeah, it's a type of ag plastic they use once. They find a way to dispose of it in some way, hopefully recycle it in some way, and then buy it again the next season.
You're looking at helping producers and others find a way to properly dispose of this if they don't have another use. And sometimes they do find uses for it on the farm, but these are, you know, 200 feet long. They are enormous pieces of plastic. How do they go about doing that? And what does your company do?
Sure. So it's a rather easy kind of step through model. If they have the machinery to roll it up, there are grain bag rollers that are out there that you can hook up to a tractor or to a PTO and just basically wind that big long bag up until it rolls tight into a roll, almost like a hay bale, almost looking plastic roll. We'll come get it if they're rolled tight like that. And we have 40,000 pounds of it on site, which I don't know exactly how many rolls that is. All rolls aren't created totally equal. But if you have around that weight, we'll come get it and dispose of it for you, so you don't have to pay for it to be disposed of. And we'll recycle it down into another product.
So you'll come anywhere in the Midwest to do that?
We will. We sure will.
And that's affordable for you to make it into small garbage bags, tall garbage bags for, I don't know, the kitchen.
Yep. It's a good product for us to take in and to make, other products from. all we ask from the end user, it could be a farmer, it could be a co-op, it could be a waste disposal that are looking to keep these grain bags out of the landfill, is that you just have the weight, you roll it up tight, you be ready for a truck that we're going to send, which is a it's a 53-foot dry van trailer, and you need to have a Bobcat, you need to have a ramp ready to go. That driver will pull up in a dry location. He or she more than likely won't even get out of the truck, but you be ready to have the equipment necessary to load him up, and in a couple hours we can be gone, and it's at no fee to the end user.
Do you need to have these bales, for lack of a better word, tied up, or are they heavy enough that they, once you set them on, they don't blow? I mean, do they need twine around them?
Yeah, it would be good if they had one piece of twine wrapped around the bag, so you know, it didn't look like kind of spaghetti-like. The tighter the roll, the better it fits inside of the van, and usually a user, after one time of loading them up and kind of understanding the standard operating procedures, will get better at doing this. And, you know, they'll roll the roll tight, and we'll understand how kind of fit these rolls or these bags into the back of the dry van.
I'll ask this again at the end of the conversation, but how do they get hold of you to have this done?
You can call me directly. On my cell phone number, it's 501-772-0161, or you can email me at cdeclerc@revolutioncompany.com. We also have an app called Push for Pickup. If you were to download that app, set up your credentials, you can also spot or dropping a pin kind of like within the app. But if you spot where that pile is, tell us you got grain bags, that will go directly to our logistics department as well, so we can get a drive-in routed out. But sometimes an end user may need a little bit of education with the app. So if they need to call or email me directly first, I'm happy to help walk them through that.
Roughly speaking, how many grain bags, the 200 footers, do you suppose? And I know you said they weigh different, but roughly speaking, how many bags makes up 40,000 pounds?
Oh goodness, I don't want to give out an exact number at all. Some of them are smaller, some of them are larger, some of them kind of get you know, they're wedged in there kind of nice, almost like a Tetris in the back, and then some of them may be kind of filled in to you know, an empty void here or there. I don't want to give out an exact number on that, because I just don't know. I wish I knew exactly how many rolls make up 40,000 pounds, but just because each roll is not exactly the same when it comes out of the field.
All right. Thank you much. I appreciate it, Chris.
No problem. Thank you, sir.
Chris DeClerc is with the Revolution Company. They're the recycling side of Delta Plastics. That's at deltaplastics.com. If you're looking for information about the recycling program, it may be easiest to go there. Again, that's deltaplastics, plural, .com. Or you can simply call Chris at 501-772-0161. That's 501-772-0161. I will say that I looked up the weight of a bag, empty, and it's somewhere around 200 to 300 pounds, so there would need to be more than 100 bags gathered together to make up a 40,000-pound load. I'll bet you as a farmer will be looking for a good way to get rid of these one-time-use 200-foot-long bags after you're done with them. It might be a good idea to contact the place from which you purchased them to see if they can put together a hub where the bags can be brought back to. Anyway, that's how I'm thinking about this. Again, deltaplastics.com. Chris DeClerc is the name. The number is 501-772-0161. And he says they'll come any place in the Midwest to pick up those bags, as long as they're all gathered together. Thank you. listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Do visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And there near the top of the page, you'll find a way to register for the Farm Assets Conference. It's not until December the 12th, but there are a limited number of seats for this event taking place in Bloomington. Make sure you register today for the Farm Assets Conference. The cost is just $80. The details are online at willag.org with more information under the registration page. Now, let's turn our attention more fully to the fall with Halloween coming up. At the end of this month, thoughts have turned to buying a perfect pumpkin for carving. Do you happen to know which state produces and processes more pumpkins than anyone else? Nathan Johanning does. He's a commercial ag educator for University of Illinois Extension.
You know, Illinois leads that not only within jack-o'-lantern, but also within the realm of processing pumpkins. Actually, the majority of the processing pumpkins, if you get, say, a can of pumpkin for your favorite pie, bread, whatever, it is probably Illinois grown. And I think as far as actual different varieties of pumpkins, especially when we get into the small stuff and then all the different colors and things, there's probably well over 200 different varieties of pumpkins. And that's just a very loose estimate. I haven't taken account, but there are a lot more varieties than what the average person may realize.
Johanning talks about what makes Illinois a top producing pumpkin state.
There's multiple factors. I think one, on the processing side, a lot of that is driven by where the processing facilities are, so that there's some in the Peoria area, northern Illinois, north central Illinois. There's some areas of processing, so they try to source, obviously, pumpkins fairly close to that due to freight and shipping constraints. However, overall, the reason this area was kind of developed into pumpkin production and many other Midwest states is that we have fairly ideal conditions. We have a balance of the summertime heat. We've had plenty of that this year, but we also have very fertile soils, some of the probably the most productive even in the world, some would say, and with balance with the temperate climate that we have, that pumpkins appreciate and enjoy.
A large part of the yearly pumpkin production in Illinois, well, it heads out of state.
I don't know the numbers, but a large portion of it does go out of state. We have a lot of commercial growers on the jack-o'-lantern side, or I should say, you know, ornamental side, that are shipping pumpkins all over the United States in the wholesale market and other things. A lot of pumpkins that go out, and certainly on the canned pumpkin, at one point, I thought that Illinois raised around 80% of the nation's pumpkin. So certainly a large amount of the canned pumpkin goes out of state and all across the country.
Again, that's Nathan Johanning. He's with University of Illinois Extension. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget, we'll record our Commodity Week program this afternoon and post it to the website by about 6 o'clock this evening. That's at willag.org. Many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend, and you can hear it in its entirety during this hour tomorrow on our home station.